Hi, everybody. My name is Jerry, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Jerry.
And, boy, it's a full house tonight. Thank you very much for being here. I thought I could sneak in here and be the expert from afar, you know, and dazzle you with my spirituality and brilliance. But then I see a whole bunch of people that go to meetings that I attend. They're here. So I got to tell you the truth, because otherwise they'll really call me on it every time. Well, let me just share a little bit about I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time taking you on a drunkalogue. I remember the first time I ever spoke at a meeting. It was at the old Claremont NRC, and I was about a year sober. And those poor people, I took them on the – it was worse than a fifth step. I mean, it went on and on. And I finally looked at my watch, and I had like 3 minutes left. And then I went to AA and got sober, and now I'm fine. Thank you very much. Anyway, that didn't work out very well. But I'm one of those guys that was an instant alcoholic. I really didn't drink my way into this fellowship. In fact, I think I exhibited alcoholic behavior when I was a little kid, even before I started drinking, the self-centeredness and the self-seeking and all of that. But I remember my very first drank a half a pint of vodka, barfed all over the front of myself, all over myself. And I just said, this is great. Let's do it again. I loved it. And that was at age 13. And I continued in that vein for a lot of years. I'm a San Diego kid. I was born and raised here, Mercy Hospital. I was raised down in the South Bay, down in Chula Vista. And that's where I went to school. And once again, I have to be honest, because I went to Chula Vista High School. I see Ben Lopez is here in the room. And Ben also went to Chula Vista High School, so I got to keep honest there, too. I was that guy in high school that everybody looked at and said, oh, that poor bastard. Because I kept a bottle in my locker. In those days, you know, I remember we used to have lockers in school. We aren't saddled with the backpacks the way the kids have to carry now. But I kept a bottle of scotch in my locker in school. And alcohol was pretty easy to come by in those days. As I mentioned, I grew up in the South Bay down in Chula Vista. And so it was very easy. We just scoot across the border, get a couple of bottles of whatever we want, you know, put it under the seat or wherever, and come back to town. Not a big deal. Beer was tougher to get than alcohol. So, oddly enough, I developed a taste for scotch very early in life. And alcohol became a way of life for me. I had when Tony was speaking, it was just astounding to me to sit here and listen to the similarities in our stories of not feeling not quite I fit in, not quite right. I just, not at ease. And when I had a drink, or two or ten, I felt at ease. I felt that warm glow and that ease. And I thought, oh, I can dance, I can talk to girls, I can do all those things that I couldn't do when I was sober. I continued drinking. I left San Diego. By the way, I mentioned Chula Vista High School class of 1953. Which is one of the great classes of all time, by the way. And I went to school in New Mexico and in Texas. And my dad, wonderful, generous man, and I paid that great guy back by drinking my way right out of school. That was my modus operandi. Came back to San Diego and got a job. And I think I had my first DUI at 22. And I won't take you through all the gory details here, but suffice to say, I was driving a little Ford Falcon, a little company car. And there was a collision between the Ford Falcon and a cement truck. The score was cement truck 1, Ford Falcon 0, in case you're wondering. But that was my first DUI. Escondido, got thrown in the drunk tank in Escondido at age 22. And said, oh, how can a guy like me, how can this happen to a nice guy like me? Well, it happened because I was alcoholic. And I didn't know it. Things would happen, needless to say, wrecking a company car didn't help my career out very much with that company I was with, and so I got another job. But as I went from job to job and company to company, alcohol became such a major part of my life. It controlled everything I did, where I ate, where I slept, who I went out with, girls I dated. It was everything to me. Alcohol was the driving force. In fact, when I met my first wife, she was my next-door neighbor. And we had two things that we really liked, alcohol and sex. And so we fell in lust together, and we were married. I hope I don't offend you folks when I talk about my first wife. She was a terrific gal. This is hard to say, but I'll share it with you. She loved sex. Any place, anywhere, anytime. Unfortunately, not with me. But these things happen. These things happen. We didn't stay married that long. We were only married a couple of years. And I had moved to Los Angeles. The company I was with had moved me to L.A. And I met my second wife. And my second wife and I were together for 25 years. And more about that one later. But once again, we had a common interest. When I first met her, we worked at the same company. And we were in the company lunchroom. You know how that. And I was sitting there. I was the new kid on the block, and she was there. And I noticed that she was pouring coffee out of her thermos bottle into a glass, but it wasn't coffee. She was drinking wine at lunch. And I thought, how sophisticated is that, man? That has to be cool, drink wine with lunch at work. So naturally, we had an affinity, and we got together. This was in Los Angeles. I moved back here. I got my second DUI in Los Angeles, by the way. In those days, they didn't have a program where you could get out of jail card and go to the 10 meetings, the SB 238 program. There, the second DUI was jail time. And so I did 5 days in the county jail in Los Angeles. I won't bore you with that, but it's not an interesting thing to do. I don't recommend it at all. Talk about low profile. I was very quiet on that one, very quiet. When we came back to San Diego, the company I was with moved me back here to San Diego, and things were going strangely for me in my career. I would get to a point, and then I found that if people started to find out that there was a little bit of dishonesty here, a little bit of self-seeking, a little bit of self-centeredness, a lot of dishonesty, a lot of self-seeking, etc., and things get tough and the coaching and counseling sessions didn't work, I would say, look, I don't need to be around this company. I'm out of here. So that was my other modus operandi. If things got tough, I got the heck out. And I noticed that my jobs were just going down and down. And I was in the mortgage business. That was where my career was in mortgages. And it went from one wonderful organization to another, to another, to another, to another. And I couldn't understand it. So I was talking about this with one of my colleagues at the company I was with. And she said, maybe you need some therapy. And I said, that's it. Therapy. That's what's wrong with me. Because it never occurred to me that alcohol was a problem. I remember standing time after time after time, standing in the shower, 6 o'clock in the morning, let that water run on my head, head pounding, and saying, today's the day I'm not going to drink. I didn't think alcohol was the problem, but I thought maybe it was an issue. And in fact, that's the way I used to call it. I never said I had an alcohol problem. I had an issue. with alcohol. Because that sounds so clean and sanitary, you know, an issue with alcohol. But this colleague says, therapy. And I thought, that's it, therapy. What's wrong with me is I've got a mental condition, you know? And I thought, what'll work for me is if I go to this shrink, they give, you know, a couple of tranquilizers, I pop those down, maybe they do a little shock treatment, I get a little zap, you know, and I feel better. Bam, I'm out of there. And I don't mean to make light of mental health, but that's where this self-centered mind was. So I went to this therapist that was recommended. The therapist sat me down, and we spent about 3 minutes together. And then she said, do you drink? What a stupid question. And I said, yes, of course. Doesn't everybody? Because everybody I knew drank. And she said, how much? And, of course, being a good alcoholic, I lied through my teeth. And I said, oh, you know, 2 or 3 drinks before dinner. And she said, okay. Now, of course, this therapist was worth her salt. She really knew what was what. So she multiplied the number I gave her by 8. And she came up with approximately the right number. So she says, as part of your therapy, before I can really do anything, I want you to stop drinking. Ugh. And she says, I want you to go to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I want you to just go to these meetings and attend them and stop drinking and go to them for a couple of weeks and then we'll get back together. And okay, no big deal. Now, at that time, I was a loan officer with Bank of America over there on Convoy Street and Complex in Kearney Mesa. And so I went to the old Neighborhood Recovery Center on Ostro Street. And Kathy, you know, I met you there. This was in the late 80s. And the place was fine. I thought, oh, okay, you know. And, of course, being a good alcoholic, brand new, I sat in the very back of the room, tried to make myself real small. But I started to listen, and I started to hear what those folks were saying. And I heard some things from them that just made some real sense to me because I identified. They were talking about the guilt and the shame and the remorse of alcoholism. They were talking about the feelings that they had of not fitting in. And I thought, good God, have they been reading my mail? What's going on here? But then they started talking about the steps. And I sat there and I thought, well, I'll keep coming to this thing. So I kept going back there. And I went to the noontime meeting every day because that was convenient for me. But I kind of drugged my feet a bit. Not a bit, a lot. Because I looked at these steps up here. And I said, okay, I can do those. Let me say it this way. I did selective steps because I looked at step 5, shared with another person the exact nature of my wrongs. I'm not going to do that. And then I looked at step 9. Whoa, make amends to the people that I thought had messed me over, because that's where my alcoholic thinking was. So I attended these meetings, but I didn't participate. I just showed up. And I thought, maybe I'll get this thing by osmosis or something. You know, it'll just kind of sneak in. Well, it didn't. I hung around the NRC for about a year. And I didn't drink most of the time. Because honesty was something that was still not really in my vocabulary. Still really didn't have that one down. And when I remember the day exactly that this happened. I was out in the backyard and, you know, doing my Chef Boyardee, the barbecue thing. And I was barbecuing a steak and I thought to myself, you know, a cocktail would really taste good now. And I wonder what this, because I'd been sober for about a year. And I thought, I wonder what's going to happen. So I went in. I had obviously been planning this for a long time. I just didn't realize it. And I went into the house and made myself a drink. And I had a drink, ate dinner, and I thought, well, see, those people from Alcoholics Anonymous, they don't know what they're talking about. I'm fine. I didn't die. You know, I didn't fall over in a faint. 3 days. 3 days, I was back exactly where I was, drinking over a fifth a day. And I did that, and I continued to do that for another 5 years. When things got so bad, and I became so discouraged, and life was just unlivable, I was with a friend of mine, and we were working with a company, and he said, you know, Jerry, this was at lunchtime. And he says, you know, Jerry, I'm an alcoholic. I don't know if you knew that. And I'm going to go to an AA meeting. Would you like to go with me? Now, why in the world he would think I would want to go to an AA meeting? Never know. So I went to an AA meeting with him. And I was at Drunks Only down at in Mission Valley when they were at the Methodist Church there on Texas Street. And I walked in, and who should be there but several people that I knew from the old days from the NRC. One of them is sitting here in the room today. And this time I listened, and I listened hard. And I started to hear recovery rather than just problems and issues. And I thought, this is where I've got to be. And that's where my journey began. Was at Drunks Only down in Mission Valley. This fine gentleman that I had recognized from another meeting came up to me and he said, Jerry, are you done? Are you finished? And I said, yes, John, I am. And I asked that gentleman to be my sponsor, and he's been my sponsor ever since. Thank you, John. We went through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And as we went through the steps, John said, we're going to read the book together. And we're going to get together once a week. And we're going to read the first 164 pages. We have some steps to do. You have some writing assignments that I'm going to give you. And we're going to be doing this together. And when we finish that, we're going to be working on the traditions. And we're going to be working on the concepts. Holy smoke, what the hell are the concepts? That's what we did. And in taking the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, I was finally able to understand what honesty is all about. What the whole idea of getting out of myself is all about. Because that wasn't a part of my makeup. I have to share with you what my fifth step was like when I took that. Because that's the one that scared me to death. And if you folks that are here in the room that are working on your steps now, and I know for me it took me a while to get the fourth step done. In fact, I'll share this with you. I kind of drug my feet doing the fourth step. And my sponsor said, how you doing? Oh, I'm fine, I'm fine. And then, you know, next week, Jerry, how are you doing on the fourth step? Oh, I'm moving on. So finally, about 3 or 4 weeks into it, I think he said, Jerry, you apparently want to sponsor yourself, and so good luck with that. I'll see you later. And I said, wait a minute. So he lit a fire under me, and we did the fourth step. And when I sat down to do step five, this is the step that scared me to death. This is the one that I was so afraid of, that I was going to share with God and another person the exact nature of my wrongs. It was absolutely right out of the book what the reaction was and what happened with me. We went to the, at that time, the Claremont Recovery Center had moved up to Convoy Court. And we went up there on a Sunday afternoon, 1 o'clock, and we spent several hours there doing my fifth step in this crummy little office in there. And he told me, Jerry, when you're finished, I want you to go home. Get in a quiet place. Get your big book out. And take a look at the steps that we've done so far. Think about what we've done. Reflect on it. Is there anything more that we should talk about? And this is what I did. And it was as though this 50-pound field pack that I've been carrying on my back for so many years was removed. I felt this weight gone. I had a freedom that I absolutely didn't know was possible. And that's when I knew I could do this thing. That's when I knew the obsession to drink was gone. It was the most uplifting thing or experience I'd had. I just didn't know that things could be that good. And it got me excited to complete and finish the steps as quickly as I could. And of course, John, my sponsor, says, well, we're going to do this, and we're going to continue in our weekly basis. It took me a whole year to do the 12 steps. A whole year. But I feel as though that grounding that I had put me on another plane. And that plane that I'm talking about is a plane that I didn't think I could have. And I'm talking about the introduction of a higher power. When I was drinking, I thought I was the power. I thought, you know, I'd seen too many John Wayne movies or something. I don't know. And I thought, you know, the old story, a man makes his own luck and a man creates his own destiny and a man, you know, and all that stuff. And as we took the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous together, I began to trust this power greater than myself, because it dawned on me an absolute truth that I'm not drinking now. And because I am trusting in this power greater than myself, I'm doing what I couldn't do before, what I could never do before. Those hundreds of times that I stood there in the shower saying, oh, God, I'm not going to drink today, and then it'll be, you know, over by 2 o'clock in the afternoon. But now I have that power that is there with me today. I have a little routine that I do in the morning, every morning now. I've lost some weight. I don't know if any of you guys that remember in the old days, I was the Isle of Jerry. But now I've part of my conditioning program is I do 2 miles every morning. And don't think that I run 2 miles. I don't want anybody to think that. I walk 2 miles. But where I live is a lot of hills, and so it's good for cardio. But I started doing the third step prayer as a meditation in the morning. I do this at sunup. I'm out the door at 5:30 every morning. And to see the sun come up and take the third step prayer. And, you know, I'm not the quickest study in town. So I've got to say it a lot. And I keep repeating that third step prayer almost like a mantra. And it's just become such a wonderful part of me and a wonderful start to the day. And it's a great meditation. So if anybody's so inclined, that's a wonderful time to do it at sunup every morning. But it really is an experience you would enjoy. I mentioned my wife, this is the hard part to talk about. But it's part of my story now. So I'm going to share it. I mentioned my wife was, we had this wonderful thing in common. We both were alcoholic. And I got sober. And my sobriety date, I'm sorry I didn't tell you this, is August 21st, 1994. And when I got sober, I wanted to be the example for my wife. Because I knew that I couldn't, you know, couldn't sponsor, I could be there and show her and be that example. But she had a terrible time. A terrible time with alcohol. For those of you that haven't seen it, alcohol takes a physical toll on some people that is just devastating. She developed neuropathy. And this was a direct result of alcoholism. She had 2 terrible falls, both of them in our house, different times. broke both hips. And our doctor, we went to the doctor, and he just said, her name is Sylvia. He said, Sylvia, you've got to quit drinking. You've got to do this. And she said, yeah, yeah, and tried and tried and tried. She was at the McDonald's Center twice, and also at a sanitarium out in the back country out in Dulzura called Rancho Labrie, which is just a wonderful place. But the disease of alcoholism was so strong in her that she wasn't able to get honest and do the steps. So the disease became stronger. And I went to a business meeting one night in 1996. And I got a phone call from a neighbor who said, Sylvia called me, and I've tried to call her back and couldn't get an answer. So I left the meeting and went home. I found her. She'd shot herself. Her note was, she couldn't live like this anymore. That's what alcoholism does. It's a disease that kills. It maims and kills. We're the fortunate ones. We're here. But now, God, let's bring the room up a little bit. Let me say it this way. I'm so grateful to be part of a fellowship, to have you part of my fellowship, because we're in this together. There's a connection that we feel in Alcoholics Anonymous that I know in no other organization that I've ever been in or been part of. We want everybody to succeed. We want everybody to win. And this connection is so strong. One of the great buzzwords when I was in business was synergy. Well, there is a synergism to Alcoholics Anonymous. The whole is greater than the sum of the parts. Each individual forming this group, there is a power. And from that power, we then can develop and get to know our own personal power greater than ourselves. And to me, this is the hope. This is the hope of our fellowship, and this fellowship, as we go on, we're growing bigger and bigger now. We've got, 1.6 million members in the United States and Canada. The big book is, published in, I believe it's 52 languages now. This is what Alcoholics Anonymous does, but it's attraction rather than promotion. We're out there. We want to be there. We want to have that hand of AA always there when people ask for it. You folks have been awfully kind to me tonight, and the guys in the back room, or the back row, you didn't suck lemons or... Yeah, you did. And thank you for allowing me to share. My name is Jerry. I'm an alcoholic.